April 4th, 1968. My apartment smelled like I was readying for a Christmas feast. I was really putting on the dog for my birthday. I looked the apartment over and was proud.
Hello?
Maya?
Yes?
Have you listened to the radio or television?
No.
Maya, please don't turn either of them on. And don't answer your phone. Give me your word.
I give you my word.
I'm on my way.
What could have caused my friend Dolly such alarm?
Dolly, come in. Nothing could be that bad.
It is that bad, and worse. Martin Luther King was shot. Maya, he's dead.
Who was dead? Who was dead now?
Not Malcolm again. Not my favorite Uncle Tommy. Not again. Not again. Not dead.
Maya, it's Martin King. Reverend King.
Well, stop talking nonsense. Stop it.
Maya, Dr. King is dead.
When I really heard her, the world capsized. If King was dead, who was alive?
Where are you going? Maya! Maya!
I didn't take purse or keys or turn off the stove or lights or tell Dolly where I was going. I joined the many people on the streets on their way to Harlem. That great mind, which considered adversity and said, "This too shall pass away," had itself passed away. That mellifluous voice, which sang out of radios and television and over altars and pulpits, which intoned from picket lines and marches and through prison bars, was stilled. Forever stilled. That strong heart, which had beat with the insistence of a kettle drum, was silent. Silenced. Strangers hugged strangers and cried. People stood five deep in front of a shop window, watching a television showing Dr. King speaking but with no sound, while the uproar swirled around them unnoticed. I went into a lighted diner. There was one other customer, his head bowed low.
Well, can I get some service?
If all you want is coffee, you can get it yourself.
I lifted the coffee pot.
May I help you?
No, baby. Nobody can help me. Nobody can help nobody. You know this is all about Malcolm X.
What? Malcolm?
See, they killed him not far from here. And we didn't do anything. A lot of people love Malcolm, but we didn't show it. And now, people who didn't agree with Reverend King, they out on the streets now, just to show how to care for somebody. Half of this is for Malcolm X, a half for Martin Luther King, and a half for a whole lot of others.
I laid my head on the counter, waited with new realization. No matter how great the man, in death, we were all the same. A man lived, a man loved, a man tried, a man died. So the saying went. But that was not all there was to it. Death of a beloved flattens and dulls everything. Great loves and large hates no longer cast such huge shadows or span so broad a distance.
I'm going to hibernate for a few weeks, Dolly. I wanted to let you know so you wouldn't worry.
What do you mean?
I'm going to stay alone. I will not be seeing anyone. I just need to seek balance.
I understand. But listen, I'm going to bring you some food. And you're going to have to talk to me once a day. I don't care what you say, just don't stop talking, okay?
Dolly knew I became mute when overwhelmed and was determined to prevent it. She was true to her word and came every day. But in the end, It was Jimmy Baldwin who pried me loose from my despair.
Just leave it by the door.
Maya, it's Jimmy.
Leave me alone.
Come on, Maya, open up.
Oh, Jimmy.
It's been 2 weeks, Maya. You've got to get out of here. Get dressed.
Jimmy.
Get dressed. I'm taking you somewhere. And put on something that makes you feel pretty. Remember what your grandmother told you?
It's hard to make the prettiest clothes fit a miserable man.
Exactly. The cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer and his wife Judy have invited me to dinner. You will enjoy them. They are both funny, and you need to laugh.
Jimmy was right. The Pfeiffers welcomed us. They laughed easily and often, defying the solemn times and somber news. Soon we were telling each other stories, snatching mirth from unlikely places and serving it to one another with both hands. On the way home...
Thank you, Jimmy.
We survived slavery. Think about that. Not because we were strong. The American Indians were strong, and they were on their own land. But they have not survived genocide. You know how we survived?
How?
We put surviving into our poems and into our songs. We put it into our folk tales. We danced surviving in Congo Square in New Orleans. We put it in our pots when we cooked pinto beans. We wore surviving on our backs when we clothed ourselves in the colors of the rainbow. We were pulled down so low we could hardly lift our eyes. So we knew if we wanted to survive, we had better lift our own spirits. So we laughed whenever we got the chance. Now, how does your spirit feel?
Just fine, thank you, Jimmy. Just fine.
We think it is past time for this television station to do some programs on African-American culture and history.
He was from Northern California and looked the part. His tan sweater sporting the requisite leather elbow patches.
I was told that you've lived in Africa and you might be the very person to bring it all together. We need an insider's view.
Well, I am writing a play right now, but I do have some ideas for a documentary.
And would the subject of African-American culture be of interest to you?
Of course. In fact, in Ghana, I was struck by how much of what I thought was Afro-American culture really had its origin in Africa. I should have anticipated that, but I didn't.
Do you think you have enough material?
How long do you want the program?
No. Not a program. We want a series. 10 one-hour programs. Can you do that?
Certainly. Surely. I just misunderstood.
I wondered if there was that much material in the whole world.
Yes, I can do that.
With time and a kindly librarian, any unskilled person can learn how to build a replica of the Taj Mahal. I pored over books about television documentaries. I memorized phrases and words I had never used, boom and speed and camera angle. I read instructions on how to write for television. Then I designed a series called Blacks, Blues, Black. We were blacks in Africa before we were brought to America as slaves, where we created the blues. And now we were painfully and proudly returning to be upstanding free black people again. The program would show the influence of Africa's culture on the West. In one program, I would have B.B. King playing blues and church choirs singing spirituals. I would point out the similarities in modern ballet and African dance, in art and African sculpture, placing Fon, Ashanti, and Dogon alongside Picasso, Clay, and Rouault. It was thrilling to have faith that I would do a good job.
Miss Angelo? My name is Robert Loomis, and I'm an editor at Random House.
I was so excited about my television series that the telephone call hardly penetrated.
Judy Pfeiffer spoke of you? She said you told wonderful stories.
Oh, how nice of her. But James Baldwin and her husband Jules told the best ones.
I'm calling to ask if you'd like to write an autobiography.
No, thank you. I am a poet and a playwright.
Are you sure?
Yes, quite. In fact, I'm leaving in a few days to write and host a television series for PBS in San Francisco. I'll be there for a month or more.
May I have a California number for you?
Of course, but I'm pretty certain I will not write an autobiography. I didn't celebrate it, but I have only had my 40th birthday this year. Maybe in 10 or 20 years.
In San Francisco, I collected dancers and singers and musicians and comedians. I went to churches and synagogues and community centers. On the first day of the shoot.
Miss Angelo, I'm calling to see if you've had a change of mind. If you are certain that you don't want to write an autobiography for Random House.
Mr. Loomis, I am sure I cannot write an autobiography. I am up to my lower jaw in this television series. When I come back to New York, I'd like to talk to you about a book of poetry.
Fine. Good luck to you.
All the pieces were falling into their proper places. Everyone I approached was agreeable and willing. I borrowed a collection of Makande sculptures and took television crews into elementary schools and people's private homes. Black's Blues Black was well received. People who had looked askance when I began the series were now standing in line to participate. And on my last day...
Miss Angelo? Robert Loomis. I won't bother you again.
I suspected he had talked to James Baldwin.
And I must say, you may be right not to attempt an autobiography, because it is nearly impossible to write autobiography as literature. Almost impossible.
I didn't think. I didn't have to.
Well, maybe I will try it. I don't know how it'll turn out, but I can try.
Well, if you'd like to write 40 or 50 pages and send them to me, we can see if I can get a contract to you. When do you think you can start?
I'll start tomorrow.
That evening, my friends Rosa and Dolly celebrated with my mother and me late into the night. In the early morning, I took my yellow pad and ballpoint pen and sat down at my mother's kitchen table. I thought about black women and wondered how we got to be the way we were. If I wrote a book, I would have to examine the quality in the human spirit that continues to rise despite the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Rise out of physical pain and the psychological cruelties. Rise from being victims of rape and abuse and abandonment to the determination to be no victim of any kind. I remembered a children's poem from my mute days in Arkansas and wrote the first line in the book that would become, "I Know Why the Caged Birds Sing."